Welcome to the Tech Flash. If you're looking to increase your EdTech knowledge that's quick and easy to listen to, you have come to the right place. Let's join our host Josh and see what today's episode is all about.
And welcome to the Tech Flush. I'm excited as always. I know you are, but not to brag too much about the Tech Flush. We've got a big show today. Probably the biggest in the history of the show. This is episode number 18. And we've got a little special guest today. Well, not little, kind of a big special guest. And so we've got Adam Spark here with Short Answer. How's it going, Adam?
It's going well. I'm super honored to be here and get to chat with you.
Yeah, I am super excited. I know, like, we talked a little bit before the show, and I was going to do an episode anyways on Short Answer, but I was like, you know what? Let's just call the founder of this incredible program and see if he comes on. So I really appreciate you coming on the show, and just, I know we're live, but it's recording, which is always a fun little idea to think about, but I really appreciate you coming on.
So, yeah, I appreciate you giving me a platform to share what we're building.
Yeah, because I mean, I know I've said this a bunch, and I know you hear this all the time, but really Short Answer, and we'll get into some of those details, but really Short Answer is just an incredible, easy program to use across all content areas. Just, it's really unreal.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate you double-clicking on the all content areas, because that's really a core focus of what we're doing, is trying to embed fun and effective writing practice across the curriculum, which is it's historically been a challenge for a variety of reasons. Excited to talk about that and all things Short Answer for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Now, before we get into Short Answer, I really love digging into people and just kind of knowing a little bit about them. So we know, like, you're from Nebraska. I'm sure it's probably still cold up there. Yeah. What are some other big things, like teaching-wise, things that you've done that you kind of want to share with our listeners out there?
Yeah. I grew up on a farm, which is actually where I'm currently at. At my parents' house right now. Grew up on a farm in the small town of Louisville, Nebraska. My dad's a farmer. My mom was an educator for decades. So grew up in a house just like completely ensconced in education. Like I said, my mom was a middle school teacher, but she was also she was on the school board of the school that I went to. Growing up, Louisville Public Schools. So, I mean, that's just my mom. I've got so many extended family, cousins and aunts and uncles and folks that are administrators and ed tech coaches and math teachers and social studies teachers and you name it. So just like grew up in a family of educators. So was always around it and was always interested in it. I went to undergrad not expecting to go into education, but I just gravitated towards it because I love learning so much. And so anyway, graduated undergrad 2014 with a degree in history, social studies, and secondary education. I've taught for the last 7 years, so mostly in Nebraska, where I'm from, but my wife, Alexa, and I also taught in China for a year. I taught in Chicago for a couple of years. I worked in a district tech office during COVID, which was insane. And I just finished my master's at Stanford in the Learning Design and Technology program, and that's where Short Answer actually started. It started as my master's capstone project, and through some grant funding that we won, it grew into something much larger than that. So we just launched it last February. I've been working on it full time since, and so it's very new. But and we're still very much building the airplane while we fly it, so to speak. But that's kind of the brief history of me, I guess.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. I think I love knowing that journey from where, like, you didn't really plan on going education, but you did, and you have that long line. It's funny, like, as teachers, we think about how our families went, like. Typically, most of our family members are teachers. We kind of stay in that the realm of professionalism for that, which I think sometimes is kind of funny how that works. But, you know, I think that's awesome.
For sure.
And I think the biggest thing that about your journey that I think I love the most, and when it really goes to a Short Answer, is thinking about you being in China and teaching. That could really has probably impacted this program to a point.
You know, it has in some ways, in other ways it hasn't. The teaching experience in China was very unique. We taught oral English for just a year over there. And I feel like what I learned from that experience was almost just more like, it was so interesting to compare the educational structure of Chinese schools with the educational structure of U.S. schools. And I don't necessarily know if you want to go down that rabbit hole, because I don't know how much of that directly applied to the short answer, but it was fascinating. I think China does some things that are actually really great, and something they do things that we could learn from. And I also think China does some things that are awful and we should never try to replicate. And so just that comparative international education experience was so valuable for me. And I think it's something that I've benefited a lot over the course of my career. I've taught in like hilariously different contexts. So rural Nebraska, which is where I'm from, urban China in Hunyang. So that's a city in southern, it's in Hunan province in southern China, and on the west side of Chicago in a charter school. Like, you could not dream up more different contexts than that. And so with every step, I became better as an educator, but I also think that thinking about how it informs the design, what we're building, what short answer, it's given me a more, I guess, diverse perspective on the needs of schools and teachers in different contexts. And, you know, in education, everything works somewhere and nothing works everywhere. And I'm very cognizant of that, having taught in many different contexts. And so, you know, we try to apply that thinking, I guess, when we design short answer. But to your question, like, how did my time in China influence short answer? It's hard for me, I guess, to draw like direct correlations there.
Yeah, and I think some of my thought behind that, because I think about short answer, like with my past experience, I was a special education teacher for 12 years. And I think how hard it is sometimes then for to write and do things. And then maybe I think part of me thinks maybe that teaching in China could have maybe influenced a little bit of just how easy this program is, and that really no matter what your level of writing or your level of reading or just your academic level in general, can really, this program can really showcase and support those type of students.
Yeah. And I mean, really what it grew out of was just in every context I taught in, so I taught social studies and English, which are writing intensive curriculum generally. And so I would spend Sundays, you know, my weekends essentially giving kids feedback. It takes so much time for teachers to give feedback on student writing, and then come in on Monday, give them the feedback and have them ignore all of it, look at their grade and move on. And just that frustration around getting kids to, first of all, to even just pay attention to the feedback, let alone like actually use it to adjust their understanding or correct things in their work, was such a challenge. And that's actually what was kind of the impetus for short answer originally. So the learning design and technology program at Stanford is incredible. And you get the privilege of spending a year trying to solve a problem in education using technology. And that's the one that I wanted to work on, was, you know, kids always asking me, how can I improve my grade, and never asking me, how can I improve my understanding, and just being frustrated with that generally. But then having that manifest itself in the experience I just described of spending so much time giving kids feedback and having them not use it. Because if you look at the research on education intervention effect sizes, like getting kids high quality feedback and getting them to use that feedback has one of the largest effect sizes, if you buy into John Hattie's research, of any education intervention that we can do with kids. But so often that effect is negated by the fact that kids aren't paying attention to the feedback that we give them, or they have emotional reactions to the feedback that we give them, or, you know, there's a million different things that can go wrong with feedback. But so anyway, so it was out of that experience that we started to work on short answer, or I guess what would become short answer. Obviously it was, you know, it took us a year to kind of get our heads around what this would become. But yeah, I guess that's where it kind of came from.
Yeah. And even like you talked about, you're giving this feedback and it's all teacher based. And I really love this idea with short answer, because I've, you know, when you go to your website, you've got some resources there and you can kind of see how you formed this. And from your days at Stanford and you're creating this program, and there's an article on there you put about this law of comparative judgment. You know, I didn't know about this, but the more I read about this, it really correlates so well to your program, and just how, instead of the teacher, your teacher's still going to give feedback, but now the students are comparing things based off this law. And if you'll give us like a brief highlight of this law, because you're really the guru behind this. So how do you feel like that really, this law of comparative judgment, just on your side of things and creating it, how does that really impact what you're trying to do here?
Well, first of all, I'm not a guru. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants and those those giants are the researchers and the research base we grow out of. And I think that's what's so cool about the LDT program, Learning Design Technology program at Stanford that this grew out of, is it's very much based around what is the research, and now let's build a tool around that research and around a research-backed theory of change that can actualize that research. As opposed to what is often the case, which is the opposite, which is let's dream up some new ed tech tool and put it into the hands of teachers and students. And then, oh, by the way, maybe we'll bolt on a research base afterwards to kind of justify what we've already built, which I think is unfortunately the predominant model of how ed tech is built, which is problematic for a million different reasons. So I feel very lucky that we were able to grow directly out of a research base. And so the study that I cite the most, although this isn't the first comparative judgment study by any means, is by a guy named Scott Bartholomew, Dr. Scott Bartholomew. He's at Brigham Young at BYU University, educational researcher, did a study in 2019, and it's around this concept of comparative judgment, to your question. So essentially what it was they had a middle school design class, I think it was eighth grade, and the kids had designed pamphlets. And so when they were done with their pamphlets, they sent the pamphlets back out to the kids. And it was a very simple scaffold, just here's two of your classmates' pamphlets. You don't know who's this is, it's anonymous. All I want you to do is click the one that you think is better based on our success criteria. And then I want you to tell me what it did, what was strong about it that made you pick it. And then the one that you didn't pick, I want you to tell me what it could do to improve. Very simple scaffold. Just, here's two things, pick the one that's better. But kids can do that at a very high level. And when we do a series of those paired comparisons, where every kid is doing maybe 5 to 10 comparisons, and then we average all of those, to kick out feedback reports, but also create a distribution of student responses. What the research shows is that the distributions created by those series of paired comparisons that the kids do mirrors that of the distributions created by expert teachers. So a simple way of putting that is kids are capable of providing the same level of high quality feedback as their teachers, which was mind blowing for us when we read the research, because it's like so many of us have had awful experiences, frankly, with peer feedback, because so often it's the blind leading the blind. We've got kids that are brand new to content. Like, why, you know, why would we expect them to be able to provide high quality feedback? That's such a challenging thing for even teachers to do right. So to expect students who are new to content to do it right has always been a challenge. But here we've got such a simple, powerful scaffold. And so that was one of the early core insights of Short Answer, of like, we can scaffold peer feedback in a way that makes it really effective. And oh, by the way, if you look at this process, it's actualizing kind of the core foundations of what really good formative assessment is, which is, you know, testing my memory here, of actualizing students as instructional resources for one another, you know, sharing success criteria with students. Oh my goodness! How am I blanking on Dylan Williams?
Yeah, you're good. Sometimes when we record things, you put you on the spot there. But you know, when I think about like this comparative judgment, you talked about like all levels can do this. So I've had the privilege of doing this in a couple classrooms, and I've done this just this week. I did it in a second grade room, and you know, when you think about second graders, like I have a second grader at home. I see her writing. I know her typing abilities, and so in this second grade classroom in our district, I did not really know the students. I knew the teacher really well. Didn't know what to expect as far as writing went. We go in a Short Answer and we just did a simple question just to see what it was going to look like to show the teacher this impact of this peer-to-peer review. And so the question was like, what is your favorite color and why? Just something very basic, just basic recall and those things. And it was really incredible to me to look at their answers. And you knew some answers were not very good. Some were really good. But it was awesome to see these second graders comparing their peers' writing. And then eventually, like, we did the battle royale. So, and eventually, like, the winner of this battle, their writing was so good. And the students could see that. And it was really incredible to see it live, to see it, you know, instead of just researching it and seeing what it does online and being excited about it, but really showing it in the classroom, and the teacher can see that. Like, I walked away out of that room, Adam, and the teacher's like, when can you come back? When can we do this again? And it just really excites me as an instructional technology coach that I'm supporting teachers. But I know that really just to hear those words really excites you for your awesome program here.
Yeah, I mean, that gets me fired up too. And I talked to one of our teachers last week, and it was kind of what you just mentioned. I just asked them, you know, because we haven't done formal efficacy research yet with Short Answer, and we desperately want to, and we're seeking partnerships with external research teams to study the efficacy of our product. Now, obviously, we grow out of this research phase, so we have some baseline efficacy, but we'd like to do more. Anyway, so we right now what we have is anecdotes from teachers, and the one that I got this week was, I asked them, like, how do you know this is working for your kid? And she said, I know it's working because, first of all, they're asking me to do it again. And prior, this is an elementary teacher, similar to what you're experiencing. And prior to using Short Answer, it was such a struggle to get my kids to write a sentence, two sentences. And now we're using this and I'm getting paragraphs. And kids are asking me to do it. So that is extremely encouraging because it's touching on that motivation piece, which I think is incredibly important, especially as we move into a world in which AI can write things a million times faster and often many cases better than many of our students. I think that motivation piece is really key. But then another thing that she mentioned, this is a teacher in Texas, she talked about how she felt like the Battle Royale activity specifically that you just brought up made good writing feel attainable for kids, because the kids see all these different examples, and that's part of the learning experience of this, is they're being exposed to exemplars, some of them really good, some of them really bad, but hopefully they're weighing their own understanding in relation to the exemplars that they're seeing. But then when they see that quote unquote champion response, which is very subjective, it's what the kids have voted on, right? And when they talk about it, it makes it feel like, oh, I could do that. Like, I see what this person did. I could, like, if you give me another chance at this, I could do that. And so that is really encouraging for us, because sometimes writing can feel overwhelming. It is a very cognitively complex task. So to make good writing feel attainable and to hear her say that was very exciting for me, I guess you'd say. So we'd love to do more like formal studies of that, and we're working on that. But right now the anecdotal stuff, like what you just shared and what that teacher just shared, super exciting.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, writing is tough. Even as an adult, as a teacher, like I just don't really enjoy it. So even going through college or my master's classes, writing is so tough. And having someone critique you is tough, but it's really exciting to see these kids get excited about writing again. Because especially when you think about our low-level kids, our students with disabilities that struggle to read or write or their math skills, this really can support all of those. Now, we've talked a lot about Short Answer and just kind of the experiences and how it really can impact our teachers, no matter K through 12, all of those things. But really, let's start talking about this Short Answer, because I know we got some listeners out there like, all right, let's get to that. We've got some beans and rice, and let's hear these meat and potato parts to it. Let's get down to business. So Short Answer, like, kind of walk us through, I don't know, a setup of it, how easy it is to use. Like, how do you want to explain this program to people? Because I mean, really, this, I've been in this role now for a year and a half, and I can tell teachers about programs, and I do that. But for some odd reason, Short Answer is one of these things that when I explain to them how easy it is to use or the benefits of it, I'm getting more, and I hate to say this, but I'm getting more business for myself and supporting teachers. It's just incredible. And just so we put this out here, Adam, we need to make sure people know that I'm not getting anything out of this podcast. Even though, like, you were at Texas at TCA and somehow, you know, we connected about a week ago, and now I'm an ambassador, which is awesome. But really, like, even if I wasn't an ambassador, I would still be excited about this program, and we probably still would be doing this podcast. So I just want to make sure people know that, like, this is Josh Morris coming out here, just sharing good news, meeting with an incredible guy with an incredible product. So just want to let you know that out there in podcasting land. But let's get back to business here, Adam. So tell us about Short Answer and just like the setup, the feel, and just how easy it is to use.
Yeah, so I think the schema that a lot of teachers have for these types of tools is like a Kahoot. So I would start there. So think mechanically, at least, like a Kahoot, where you share a code with kids, kids sign in with a code, you push out questions with you. It's a very common structure, I think, for K-12 digital instruction and assessment tools. So I guess if you're thinking, how does it work, I use that schema. The difference is, in ours, it's all constructed responses. So it's all writing-based. Kids can respond to questions or writing prompts with text or with image or both. So teacher pushes that out to kids. Kids respond. They rate their confidence they submit. Once the teacher has all the responses, they then click begin feedback. And there's a variety of activities, but in all of them, those responses are going to go back to the kids, and they're going to provide gamified feedback to each other based on the success criteria set by the teacher. So if I'm working on, I don't know, middle school writing skills of like topic sentence, supporting details, maybe my success criteria are clear topic sentence and strong supporting details. If we're doing an all-in activity, all the kids are going to get two answers on their screen, and they're going to use that success criteria at the top to weigh both answers. So they're going to read through both and then drag the success criteria to the response that they think better contains that criteria. So it's like, of these two, which one has a more clear topic sentence? Which one has better supporting details? And as a part of that, they're awarding points, which is sort of the lightweight gamification element of that. But from a learning side of things, it's almost like you're giving kids the category of the rubric, but you're not filling in the description of the category, because we want the kids to fill that description in on their own of what makes for quality within these success criteria by going through these series of paired comparisons and then having a discussion at the end. So kids do that, teacher clicks, you know, show results. It depends on the activity, but it's like, hooray, here's some of our top responses. So that's kind of the gamification element of like kids wanting to see their name up there on the board. But then that's where a teacher can have a scaffold the discussion about what makes for quality depending on whatever we're focusing on. So, you know, okay, here is our quote unquote top response or our champion response. We're doing like a battle royale. So then it's like, okay, 89% of you that saw this said that it had a clear topic sentence. Can you tell me more about why you felt this had a clear topic sentence? And they're getting kids to articulate again what makes for quality, and they're doing that on their own. I think part of the power of this comparative judgment approach is that you're getting kids to articulate it on their own. We're a bit skeptical at short answer of rubrics. Now, I'm certainly not telling teachers not to use rubrics, but the research on rubrics is a bit mixed. They help assessment feel less arbitrary because you're sharing success criteria with kids up front. And they definitely improve performance on tasks when you share them with students. But I think that we have to, as teachers and as instructional coaches or whatever your role is, we have to differentiate between performance, which is how well a student does on a task, versus learning, which is a change in long-term memory. And I suspect, and I've experienced this in my time teaching English, that if a kid has a rubric and they're just following the script that was given for them, if we take that script away, are they capable of producing the same content? I don't know. Whereas with short answer, I think that we're more likely to get that true learning, because again, we're not giving them that crystal clear script on exactly what they need to do. We're just giving them the success criteria that we want to focus on, and they're having to articulate on their own by both constructing the response and analyzing a bunch of other responses, what quality should look like. So I think that's really powerful from a learning perspective. And I do sometimes think that it gets lost. Like when people jump, and there's something I worry about a lot, frankly, is when people just jump into short answer and they don't know much about it. I can see where maybe that, what I just explained in the research base that we grew out of, maybe doesn't necessarily come off if you don't know this background. So Josh, do you have any tips on how we can better convey this, this learning science guiding our approach to teachers who are using our tool? I would appreciate thoughts. But yeah, I guess that's kind of how the tool works and how we're actualizing that research base we grew out of.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to your question, I mean, just getting teachers to understand that research, I think you really have to sit down and have like a genuine conversation with them and kind of setting it up. And sometimes that's hard, you know, in your school systems, like your teachers are so incredibly busy from that 8 to 3:30, whenever their school day is, like, it's just hard to have those genuine conversations during the day. So you almost have to read some material. You're going to have to do a little extra work to really, to understand the research behind it and know those things. I think it's just a tough thing to really convey those. But I'll make sure we, you know, even if your listeners out there, remember, we've got a website. You guys can go to bit.ly/techflush. And I've got that Google form on there. So y'all, if y'all have any ideas of how we can and do that, listeners out there, feel free to fill that form out and we can share that with you, Adam, as we get some of that feedback. And not to backtrack a little bit, but I love this, you know, you talked about this success criteria. I think this is one of my favorite things. Because when we ask students to grade papers or to review things, we're asking them to look at a lot of different things when it's just a general statement. I love this criteria because even with my second graders or this, you know, this morning, I did one with sixth graders and the criteria changes, you know, like you clear explanation, strong supporting ideas, creative. Are you using the vocabulary words the right way? Does this make sense? And that criteria can change depending on your students and what they needs, their needs are. I think that's huge. It's not like a set criteria every time. You know, like when I went on there, I know there's already three things already there for criteria, but I can go in there and I can delete all those and make my own. I think that is just an incredible tool to allow teachers to really showcase what they know about their students.
Yeah, you're touching on an important point, which is that those success criteria need to directly align with the goals of your lesson or your unit. And going back to, you know, earlier, I couldn't remember. So we grew out of this framework that was originally created by Dylan William and Paul Black, and a very foundational formative assessment paper called Inside the Black Box. But basically, they have kind of five pillars of effective formative assessment. And the one that you're touching on is clarifying and sharing learning intentions and success criteria. So that's one way in which I think Short Answer is actualizing that principle of good formative assessment. And then off of that, and this is another one of those pillars of effective formative assessment, but it's engineering effective classroom discussions that are eliciting really good evidence of student understanding. Because, I mean, to what extent is your class capable of articulating what makes for, I don't know, a strong supporting detail or a creative hook sentence or a good transition sentence or, you know, this is all structure, you know, let alone the discussions around content. I hope that we've been very deliberate about the way we've built this to actualize those different principles. And really good formative assessment has been shown to 2x the rate of learning in the class. So if we're thinking about how do we accelerate learning post-pandemic, I think doubling down on just foundational, really good formative assessment practices is one of the best possible investments that we can make of our time and of our money. We're thinking about how do we accelerate student learning and just make up for learning gaps and all of those different things. So.
Yeah, and I mean, really, this, you know, it works for all levels, all abilities. I mean, it's just incredible. Like, and you know, you talk about like this criteria for these things, and this, I want this to kind of build into our next little segment here, Adam. And so this is the part, I think we talked about this a little bit, and I know I'm having a little technical issues, but it's time for the Tech Flush. So you've got our little tip of the day. And so my favorite things when we think about this criteria and allowing students an easy way to grade things, to see those sentence structures and how they should be and kind of build on that as a teacher. I love when you start a question that you've got these sentence stems in here. From my days of teaching special education, you know, it was a real struggle to begin their sentences and begin like their thoughts. And so by having these automatic sentence stems there, I mean, just huge. And you can even go in there and edit those to make it more pertain to what you're doing. So it's like the sixth grade teacher I was talking to this morning, we talked about writing thesis statements. So now she can go in there, she can go ahead and draft a thesis statement and leave out the parts that they need to fill in. And I think this is just huge for students to be able to see that automatically on their screen and not necessarily have to go ask for help. It's just there to support them.
Yeah, and you're touching on something on a larger point of why we're building Short Answer, and that is, and I swear I'm going to land this plane. What I'm about to say is not directly connected to what you're saying, but let me land the plane here. So, in the wake of AI, we think, and this is kind of a hot take, and I acknowledge that, but we think that a lot of writing instruction, not all of it, maybe not even the majority of it, but some of it, needs to come back into the classroom, where teachers can monitor how much of an influence AI is having on student writing. Regardless of what AI is capable of doing for students, we still have to build those foundational skills, those foundational, I would emphasize, independent writing skills of putting words into sentences and sentences into paragraphs and having it maintain a consistent voice and sixth grade writing and blah, blah, blah. And so for us, that Short Answer, that's bringing writing back into the classroom. The challenge with bringing writing back into the classroom is that now we've got a limited time frame. And so when you're talking about, I don't know, you're in Tennessee, is it English language learners in Tennessee? Is it emerging bilingual students? It's ELL, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
So when we're talking about supporting English language learners, or if we're talking about students with dyslexia, or if we're talking about students with an IEP that need extra support, not necessarily time, but just in-class writing, that does have a time constraint on it can be overwhelming for those kids. So it's something we think about a lot at Short Answer. And that's to your point, like that's why we've built in these automated sentence stems for kids that need them. We've worked in automated, and when I say automated, I mean AI is generating the first pass. The teacher can then edit this, and then the kids can use these scaffolds. But anyway, automated outlines for kids. So just brief little, here's how you might structure your response. And one we're working on right now that I'm excited about that should be out there in the next couple of weeks is a translation scaffold for those English language learners. If they have words or things that aren't, that they don't understand, they can put them into this and it will help translate it. So that's very important for us moving forward. Again, writing is cognitively overwhelming for everyone, but it's doubly or triply or whatever, however many multipliers complicated for students that might be on an individualized education program or have special learning. So it's something that we think about a lot and are continuing to build around.
Yeah. And I love that you talked about this whole AI issue because like, you know, AI is great and, you know, I can go out here and I can write a paper. I can ask it to do all these things. And so when you talk about bringing right, and I've not thought about this until you brought this up, but really Short Answer allows students, you're not necessarily writing paragraphs. You can write simple sentences and it really forces us in a quick time frame to write a sentence and turn it in and let our peers review it. Write a couple sentences, turn it in, let our peers review it. I think this is incredible. Just thinking about this in our conversations, that is so true because I mean, AI, again, like you even said, like our sentence stems and our outlines, AI is creating this in Short Answer, but now we're having students having to write the blanks, fill in everything else, and it's their words instead of something that's generating for them. And I think that's another win-win for Short Answer and just supporting students in their learning. I think that's huge. I really appreciate you saying that out here.
Yeah, and a couple things on that. So I think of Short Answer as, yes, it's foundational for those building blocks, which is what you're describing. So if you're working with those upper elementary, middle school kids, maybe we are just focusing on short form writing. But if you're working with those upper level kids and they are doing longer form page, 2-page, 5-page research papers or whatever, I think Short Answer is really an effective way to scaffold and chunk those larger writing assignments. Cause it's like, okay, we're working on transition sentences and whatever, transitioning from our intro paragraph to our body paragraph and having thesis statements. So in Short Answer, what I want you to do is copy paste in those first two paragraphs and our success criteria is going to focus on whatever transitions, effective transitions, we'll say. So even though we call it Short Answer, in some ways I regret that because it does give people the sense that it can only be used for short form writing. But I do think that it's a really powerful way to chunk larger long form writing. So when we're thinking about supporting students in their writing instruction, especially post AI, I think that's powerful. But then another thing that I think about a lot, and maybe this is unrelated, but with AI, in the context of AI and writing, is the issue of student motivation. Because why is a student going to want to learn how to write when they now live in a world where a machine can write for them 100 times, a million times faster than they can, and oftentimes better than they can? I don't pretend to have the answer to that. it's a serious challenge. One thing I think about a lot is this concept of the illusion of competence, where students start to use these AI tools and they're able to produce relatively good products of writing that kids can pass off as their own potentially. But what happens when they produce things and then it's on the student to have to edit it and make it, you know, and make it not just this generic AI thing. They have to actually edit it and reorganize it and do all these higher order thinking skills. When it comes to writing, are they going to have those skills if and when they grow up in a world where they were completely dependent on this tool to produce this product for them? I don't know. And so what happens when we live in a world where essentially students aren't understanding that they know how to prompt and get these AI tools to produce things for them, but then they don't know what to do with the products that have been produced? That's something that I think about a lot. I think that does relate to student motivation in many ways. And so I'm hoping that Short Answer can be a small part of the solution in making sure that our students still have those foundational writing skills so that they do know how to edit and make their own, I guess, the text that is being produced by these AI machines like ChatGPT.
Yeah. And that's like, you know, since TCA, I went to a session for Matt Miller and he talked, one of the things that he said was product versus process. And I think, you know, with this AI, you sometimes like with writing, we're just getting a product, but now we've really got to think as teachers, what kind of process we're going to get from that. What kind of process are we going to teach them? And so you, like you said, like we're going to have to edit these things. We're going to have to teach them, like, even though we can generate these things, but we've got to go back and edit and we've got to know like our nouns, our verbs, our commas, how things work. Because if we don't know that, really, we're just plagiarizing everything that we do. We've got to understand the understand the foundations of writing. And so I think, you know, that's kind of where we're going to, but you know, in 10 years, it's like I was talking to another tech coach the other day. It's like, in 10 years, what is this all going to look like? And so I think with this.
Yeah. And I totally interrupted.
No, you're good. It's tough. I know I'm in Tennessee. You're in Nebraska. We're talking on the phone. It's hard to read those things, but you know, it's just going to be tough. I just, you know, and I think I know we're talking about short answer, but I think this is a good thing to work towards. And it just, I don't know, like we talked about short answers, but you can also have your paragraphs and write more things in here. So I think this is just a good avenue to work towards those skills that we need.
Yeah. Cause I still live in Silicon Valley. My wife, Alexa, and co-founder of Short Answer, Alexa Spark, is a grad student at Stanford right now studying education data science. So she's studying, you know, natural language processing, machine learning, and all the underlying technology that's driving AI. So we live in AI land every day.
Yeah.
For better and for worse. And I have had conversations with people in Silicon Valley that won't be named that have suggested to me that, like, well, why should even learn how to write? They don't need to learn how to write anymore. Like, the machine is going to be able to do it so much faster and better than them that this is not necessary anymore. Essentially suggesting that what we're doing with Short Answer is meaningless and useless. And obviously I don't agree with that. And I think it just completely glosses over, like, basic foundational research on how people learn. Students are going to have to understand how to handle the output of these AI machines. I'm talking about writing in this context, but that applies to everything that you might use AI for. And if you're going to understand the output, then know how to make them your own and do things with them at a higher level, you're going to have to still have those foundational skills. So I think the suggestion that we can just use AI to outsource everything is absurd and doesn't take into account human learning.
Yeah. I totally agree with you on all that. I think it's going to be an interesting world for education. It's going to be an interesting world. Like, you know, my kids are 6 and 8. So I think about when they're in high school, when they're in college, like, what is this world going to look like? You know, and I feel like as an instructional technology coach, I got to stay up on tech things, but in 10 years, the people that are coming behind me, they're going to do this job. What are they going to bring to the table? It's like, I don't know. We could go down this rabbit hole this whole time, Adam, but it is insane to honestly to think about where we've been and where we're going. I think it's just unreal.
I agree. And sorry, just one more.
No, you're good. Let's talk it. I love it.
I really like talking about that. So one thing I think about a lot about the generation that you just mentioned, that your daughter's a part of, is students increasingly are going to get less repetition, I should say, at independent writing. And I mean that in the context of school, but I also just mean that in the context of life. Google Chrome is working on, like, they just launched a feature where it's going to automatically fill in forms for you that show up in your web browser based on the context of whatever the form is asking for. Snapchat has embedded an AI chatbot that can write text messages for you if you want. You can think of a million different scenarios where AI is just going to be embedded into everything that we use all the time. And I think that it's fair to assume that that's going to decrease the amount of reps our kids are getting and that everyone is getting, like, with independent writing. And so, again, I don't think that we should just abandon foundational literacy skills. So we're going to have to make up for those lost reps. And to me, what that looks like is cross-curricular writing. It can't just fall on the English teacher anymore to be the quote-unquote the writing teacher. I think everybody in the building has to be a writing teacher, whether you teach English or social studies or science or math or an elective. Maybe not the PE teacher, but I think just about everybody else needs to be embedding writing in their content area. And I also know as a teacher that it's overwhelming and you already have way too much on your plate. So asking the science and math teacher to throw some writing into their curriculum can be frustrating and overwhelming. So our goal with Short Answer is to make it incredibly easy and fun to embed writing into things that teachers are already doing. And part of our goal with that is to make up for those lost reps that are the result of, or what we think will be increasingly the result of AI taking away those reps that students would otherwise be getting. And I don't know, maybe that's a bit grandiose, but that's increasingly a part of our mission at Short Answer.
No, and it's even like you talk about increasing those reps across all content areas. So like this morning, I had an hour in an English class with sixth graders. And in that hour, like I spent a little bit of time of setting up Short Answer and how we're going to use it, putting your code in, all those things, right? So our first little thing we had to do took a little bit. But after that, I mean, we did like, I don't know, I think it was like 4 or 5. And we probably could have done more than that in a time frame. Because once they understand, the students understand it, your teacher understands how to use it, man, you could do in 5 minutes, you could have a quick little writing for your start or your exit ticket and in between lesson little feedback. And then you move right along. So it's, I mean, it's so fast. Like, it's really unreal. Yeah,
that's our goal. And I'm excited to hear you say that. And the other thing I would double click on there is, hopefully the teacher is seeing like, oh, I can do a bunch of writing activities in my class, but I don't necessarily have to also add on all the grading and feedback that typically comes with writing. Because I noticed that over the course of my, I mean, relatively short, it was a 7-year teaching career, of like, as I went through the career, I started to do less constructed responses as a part of my formative assessment practice. And the very practical reason for that was I didn't have time to read through 125 short constructed responses every day. So if we could find a way, like with Short Answer, to embed these activities, but without necessarily having to go through as a teacher and read all the students' responses, but they still get the benefits of high quality feedback, and the teacher is still left with a high quality distribution of which ones of my students who's getting it, who's doing well, who's struggling. Ideally, you're getting all those formative assessment benefits, but you're not getting that extra workload because you're able to lean on your students effectively. So that's a big part of what we're doing
too. Oh yeah, 100%. And even, you know, in Short Answer, like once you've ended your question, I know the teacher can go back and look at their question that they've created and see the artifacts. They can see the evidence from their student writing and go back. And if they needed to take a grade, they want to see their writing and see how it increases over the semester, they can go back and check that as well, correct?
Yeah, they can. And that's actually something that we're working on. So right now that would live in the results tab. First of all, Short Answer is free. So all the things that we've described, and probably should have said that earlier, all the things that we've described in this podcast, aside from those AI generated writing scaffolds, are part of the free plan. But yeah, so it'll live on the results tab, but something that we want to build out moving forward is the ability for teachers to track student writing progress over time and have them track that progress relative to learning standards. So we're currently working on allowing teachers, or empowering teachers would be a better word, to attach learning standards to writing prompts and questions so that they can track that data relative to the learning standards and automate that in some way to make it easier. So that's something that, again, that's we're building the plane while we're flying it. And that's one thing that we're working on building right now.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Now, Adam, I think you have another obligation here soon. So we've got to kind of start wrapping up this and landing this plane here soon. But I do want to talk about, I think, at least two more things. Well, maybe three.
Yeah.
My other big tip for Short Answer that I really love is when I'm on here, I'm looking at it now and it's got my join code and those things for students to join. But I love this. And I was just playing with this. And I don't remember if I've seen this in the videos. If I did, I apologize, Adam. But if I click on my name or that join code, a QR code comes up. I think that is so cool because now if I've got kids that have an iPad or their phone, they can still do the writing. They don't necessarily need their device like a laptop or Chromebook to participate in Short Answer. I think that's huge. I love that feature.
Yeah, we did that specifically for the little. So we know that iPads tend to be the predominant tech used at the elementary level, and getting kids signed in at the elementary level can sometimes be a challenge.
So yes.
Yeah, they can just hold up their iPads and scan that and it automatically signs them in. One thing I would emphasize that I worry about with the QR codes is that it might increase the amount of people that will try to use Short Answer on their phone. And you can use Short Answer on your phone, and if you want to, you should, but it's a much better experience if you're on an iPad or just something with a full-scale keyboard of some capacity, I think is going to be better than typing. But I guess if you prefer typing away on your phone, go for it.
Yeah, that's a good tip. We'll have to remember that out there in podcast land. Phones are, you can use them, but you know, that's for anything. Like when you go to websites, phones just sometimes don't work as we want them to. But so I know we got to wrap up. I've already said that, but let's talk about some resources. I know you had like an incredible set of resources on Short Answer for Teachers, and it's really broken down into content and subject, or content subject, same thing, but you've really got it broken down and just easy to use. So let's talk a little bit about that for our listeners out there.
Yeah, so if you go to our website, which is myshortanswer.com, you know, you can sign up in the top right or have your students log in the top right. But then there's three tabs that I would draw attention to. The first is, you just mentioned, the teacher resources tab. And we've kind of organized that in order of complexity. So like if you're completely brand new to Short Answer, the top tutorial videos are probably where you want to start. If you scroll down, there are subject guides. So those are Common Core aligned guides for almost every content area that'll give you example activities that you can use with Short Answer. Again, we're very serious about wanting to be standards aligned, but because we're not delivering content, we are a platform through which you teach content. It's sometimes hard for us to align directly with standards, but these are all Common Core aligned, which generally tend to align pretty closely with. I would encourage teachers to check out those subject guides, or if you're an instructional coach and trying to get teachers onto the platform, I would encourage you to share those with your staff. I think if you keep scrolling down on that page, the creating questions and feedback criteria guide and posters is probably the most useful resource of anything on here in terms of onboarding new teachers to the platform. And then if you keep going, there's professional development resources and things. So that's the teacher resources tab. The other two, the Our Approach tab, is where we lay out our theory of change and our research base that we grew out of, that we've talked a lot about on the podcast. And then the About Us page is just a little brief story about who we are and my wife and I, but then we've got an amazing group of educational researchers and other folks that that advise us. So that's just about everything on our landing page, I think.
Yeah, and I think there's just, you know, you go to some websites and it's just hard to find things. I think going here, just super easy, you know, right at the top, like you said, you got Our Approach, About Us, and the teacher resources. Everything's laid out just really beautifully and just very easy to find. I've never had to hunt for anything. I've never had to like, oh, where was this again? And I had to find it. It's just perfect, perfect spots for all that. So I appreciate your team has done an incredible job, Adam, putting all these things together. I think Short Answer, again, like, it's just an incredible program. I'm so thankful that you decided to come on the show. I think is a big one. It's the biggest show in the history of the Tech Flush. So you were a part of that.
Well, I'm honored. Like I said, I'm really honored that you thought to include me in this, and I'm really thankful to you for giving me a platform to talk about this work, because I really enjoy getting to talk about it and share it with people. So thank you.
Yeah. And so before we end, Adam, tell us how we can follow you. I know you're on Twitter. You've got some other social media probably as well. So tell us how we can follow you in Short Answer.
Yeah, so I'm pretty active on teacher Twitter. So my handle's at Mr. Spark Tweet, and I think my name now is Adam at myshortanswer.com. We also have a relatively active TikTok that I'll encourage people to check out. I've been increasingly blown away by how large of a teacher community, and really some pretty good content. It's shocking for me to say about TikTok of all platforms, but pretty good teacher content and professional development content on TikTok. So I think it's just short.answer on TikTok. I don't know how many of your users are on LinkedIn, but I guess if you want to follow me on LinkedIn, you can. I'm not as active on that platform. So I would say Twitter and TikTok, and then obviously just try us out. MyShortAnswer.com. It's free to use. So freemium, classic freemium K-12 ed tech tool. So try it out in your classroom, and if you have feedback, email me directly at adam@myshortanswer.com. Like I said, we're building it. And so feedback is vital for us to kind of co-construct and co-build this with teachers. So those are all the ways it's great.
Awesome. Cool. And I love that about the TikTok. I'm going to have to get a TikTok account, Adam, and follow y'all. I think that's going to be incredible. I don't even have one, so we're going to have to create that.
Yeah, I didn't have one until 6 months ago. I'm new to it, too.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Well, cool. Adam, seriously, man, I appreciate you coming on the show. I think this was incredible. I hope y'all reach out, follow Adam on Twitter, on his TikTok, all those things. And even Adam, I just thought about this. Certifications, if teachers want to go through that process, that's available to them.
Yeah. So if they go to our website, they'll have to scroll to the bottom. There's a resource that says blog in the footer of our website. And there's a blog post we have, and I can share it on my Twitter too, that lays out our ambassador program and the process that you can go through to become certified and really ground yourself more in the research guiding our tool, and we'll equip you with some research, with some tools that you can use to share with folks.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Well, again, I know I've said this like four times, Adam, but I'm so thankful that you were here. I hope you appreciate it. And just remember, guys, you can follow Adam. You can also follow the Tech Flush on Apple, Amazon, all the good things to listen to your podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Josh_Morris65 and check out the website bit.ly/Tech Flush and also our district's technology page, which is bcstechnology.org. So, again, Adam, thank you so much for coming. I really enjoyed this conversation. I really can't wait to sit down, edit this, put all the sound effects in, and let it be live. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, thanks, Josh. I appreciate it. I'll talk to you later.
Yeah, sounds good, Adam. Have a good one.
Yeah, have a good day. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today on the Tech Flush podcast. Stay tech savvy, keep those gadgets charged, and remember, teachers and technology go hand in hand, connecting students to a world of knowledge for an electrifying learning experience. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and spread the word about the Tech Flush to your friends. Catch all episodes on Apple Podcasts. See you next time on the Tech Flush.